Star Wars, Dark Force Rising, by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 8, side 2. I understand your feelings, Thrawn said, his face hardening again. But they have no place here. Mixed loyalties are a luxury no officer of the Imperial Fleet can afford. Certainly not if she wishes someday to be given a command of her own. Mara drew herself up again to her full height. Yes, sir. It won't happen again. I trust not. Thrawn glanced past her shoulder and nodded. With a rustle of movement, her stormtrooper escort began to withdraw. The deck officer's station is just beneath the control tower, he said, gesturing to the large transparent steel bubble nestled in among the racked TIE fighters, three-quarters of the way up the hangar bay's back wall. He'll assign you a shuttle and pilot to take you back to the surface. It was clearly a dismissal. Yes, Admiral, Mara said. Stepping past him, she headed toward the door he'd indicated. For a moment, she could feel his eyes on her, then heard the faint sound of his footsteps as he turned away toward the lift cluster beyond the starboard blast doors. Yes, the Grand Admiral had made his point, but it wasn't exactly the one he'd intended to make. With that single casual act of betrayal, he had finally destroyed her last wistful hope that the new empire might someday measure up to the one that Luke Skywalker had destroyed out from under her. The empire she'd once been proud to serve was gone. Forever. It was a painful revelation, and a costly one. It could erase in one stroke everything she'd worked so hard to build up for herself over the last year. It could also cost Carda his life. And if it did, he would die believing that she had deliberately betrayed him to Thrawn. The thought twisted in her stomach like a heated knife, mixing with her bitter anger toward Thrawn for lying to her, and her shame at her own gullibility in trusting him in the first place. No matter how she looked at it, this mess was her fault. It was up to her to fix it. Beside the door to the deck officer's office was the huge archway that led from the hangar bay proper into the service and prep areas behind it. Mara threw a glance over her shoulder as she walked, and spotted Thrawn stepping into one of the turbo lifts, his tame Nogri at his side. Her stormtrooper escort, too, had disappeared, its members probably returning to their private section aft for debriefing over the mission they'd just completed. There were 20 or 30 other people in the bay, but none of them seemed to be paying any particular attention to her. It was probably the only chance she would ever get, with her ear cocked for the shout, or the blaster shot that would mean she'd been noticed. She bypassed the deck officer's office and stepped past the retracted blast doors into the prep area. There was a computer terminal just inside the archway, built against the wall where it would be accessible to both the forward prep area and the aft hangar bay. Its location made it an obvious target for unauthorized access, and as a consequence, it would undoubtedly be protected by an elaborate entry code. Probably changed hourly if she knew Thrawn. But what even a Grand Admiral might not know was that the Emperor had had a private back door installed into the main computer of every Star Destroyer. It had been his guarantee, first during his consolidation of power, and then during the upheaval of rebellion, that no commander could ever lock him out of his own ships. Not him, and not his top agents. Mara keyed in the backdoor entry code, permitting herself a tight smile as she did so. Thrawn could consider her a glorified courier if he liked, but she knew better. The code clicked, and she was in. She called up a directory, trying to suppress the creepy awareness that she might already have brought the stormtroopers down on top of her. The backdoor code was hardwired into the system and impossible to eliminate. But if Thrawn suspected its existence, he might well have set a flag to trigger an alarm if it was ever used. And if he had, it would take far more than another show of humble loyalty to keep her out of trouble. No stormtroopers had appeared by the time the directory came up. She keyed for the detention section and ran her eye down the listing, wishing fleetingly that she had an R2 astromech droid like Skywalker's to help cut through all of it. Even if Thrawn had missed the backdoor code, he would certainly have alerted the deck officer to expect her. If someone in the control tower noticed she was overdue and sent someone out to look for her, there it was, an updated prisoner list. She keyed for it, pulling up a diagram of the entire detention block while she was at it. A duty roster was next, with attention paid to the shift changes, then back to the daily orders, and a listing of the Chimera's projected course and destinations for the next 6 days. Thrawn had implied he would be waiting a few days before beginning a formal interrogation, letting boredom and tension and Carda's own imagination wear down his resistance. Mara could only hope she could get back before that softening up period was over. A drop of sweat trickled down her spine as she cleared the display. And now came the really painful part. She'd run through the logic a dozen times while walking across the hangar bay deck, and each time had been forced to the same odious answer. Carda would almost certainly have had a backup spotter watching the Etherways approach, who would have had a front row view of the stormtrooper's trap. If Mara now returned free and clear from the Chimera, she would never be able to convince Carda's people that she hadn't betrayed him to the Imperials. She'd be lucky, in fact, if they didn't burn her down on sight. She couldn't rescue Carda alone. She couldn't expect any help from his organization, which left only one person in the galaxy she might be able to enlist. Only one person who might possibly feel he owed Carda something. Clenching her teeth, she keyed for the current location of a Jedi Master named Jorus Kabalth. It seemed to take the computer an inordinate amount of time to dig out the information, and the skin on Mara's back was starting to crawl by the time the machine finally spat it out. She caught the planet's name, Jomark, and keyed off, doing what she could to bury the fact that this interaction had ever taken place. Already, she'd pushed her timing way too close to the wire, and if they caught her here on a computer she shouldn't have been able to access at all, she was likely to find herself in the cell next to Carda's. She barely made it. She just finished her cleanup and started back toward the archway, when a young officer and three troopers came striding through from the hangar bay, their eyes and weapons clearly ready for trouble. One of the troopers spotted her, muttered something to the officer. "Excuse me," Mara called as all four turned to her. "Can you tell me where I can find the deck officer?"
"I'm the deck officer," the officer said, scowling at her as the group came to a halt in front of her. "You Mara Jade?"
"Yes," Mara said, putting on her best unconcerned, innocent expression. "I was told your office was over here somewhere, but I couldn't find it."
"It's on the other side of the wall," the officer growled. Brushing past her, he stepped to the terminal she'd just left. "Were you fiddling with this?" he asked, tapping a few keys.
"No," Mara assured him. "Why?"
"Never mind. It's still locked down," the officer muttered under his breath. For a moment he looked around the area, as if searching for some other reason Mara might have wanted to be back here. But there was nothing, and almost reluctantly he brought his attention back to her again. "I've got orders to give you transport down to the planet."
"I know," she nodded. "I'm ready."
The shuttle lifted and turned and headed off into the sky. Standing by the Etherway's ramp, the stink of burned paving still thick in the air, Mara watched the Imperial craft disappear over the top of the landing pit.
Avis, she called. Come on, Avis. You've got to be here somewhere.
Turn around and put your hands up. The voice came from the shadows inside the ship's hatchway.
All the way up. And don't forget, I know about that little sleeve gun of yours.
The Imperials have it now, Mara said, as she turned her back to him and raised her hands.
And I'm not here for a fight. I came for help.
You want help? Go to your new friends upstairs, Avis retorted.
Oh, maybe they were always your friends, huh?
He was goading her, Mara knew, pushing for a chance to vent his own anger and frustration in an argument or gun battle.
I didn't betray him, Avis, she said. I got picked up by the Imperials and blew them a smoke ring that I thought would buy us enough time to get out. It didn't.
I don't believe you, Avis said flatly. There was a muffled clank of boot on metal as he came cautiously down the ramp.
No, you believe me.
Mara shook her head.
You wouldn't have come here if you didn't.
She felt a breath of air on the back of her neck as he stepped close behind her. Don't move, he ordered. Reaching carefully to her left arm, he pulled the sleeve down to reveal the empty holster. He checked her other sleeve, then ran a hand down each side of her body.
All right, turn around, he said, stepping back again.
She did so. He was standing a meter away from her, his face tight, his blaster pointed at her stomach.
Turn the question around, Avis, she suggested. If I betrayed Carda to the Imperials, why would I come back here, especially alone?
Maybe you needed to get something from the Etherway, he countered harshly. Or maybe it's just a trick to try to round up the rest of us. Mara braced herself.
If you really believe that, she said quietly, you might as well go ahead and shoot. I can't get Carda out of there without your help.
For a long minute, Avis stood there in silence. Mara watched his face, trying to ignore the white-knuckled hand holding the blaster.
The others won't help you, you know, he said. Half of them think you've been manipulating Carda from the minute you joined up. Most of the rest figure you for the type who switches loyalties twice a year anyway.
Mara grimaced.
That was true once, she admitted. Not anymore.
You got any way to prove that?
Yes, by getting Carda out, Mara retorted. Look, I haven't got time to talk. You going to help or shoot?
He hesitated for a handful of heartbeats. Then, almost reluctantly, he lowered the blaster until it was pointed at the ground.
I'm probably scribing my own death mark, he growled. What do you need?
For starters, a ship, Mara said. Silently letting out a breath she hadn't realized she'd been holding.
Something smaller and faster than the Etherway. One of those three boosted skip-ray blast boats we brought in from Vagran would do nicely. I'll also need one of those Isalamiri we've been carrying around on the wild card, preferably on a nutrient frame that's portable.
Avis frowned. What do you want with an Isalamir?
I'm going to talk to a Jedi, she said briefly. I need a guarantee he'll listen.
Avis studied her a moment, then shrugged. I suppose I really don't want to know. What else? Mara shook her head.
That's it.
His eyes narrowed.
That's it? That's it. How soon can you get them to me?
Avis pursed his lips thoughtfully.
Let's say an hour, he said. That big swamp about 50 kilometers north of the city. You know it?
Mara nodded.
There's a soggy sort of island near the eastern edge. Right. You bring the Etherway to the island, and we'll do the switch there.
He glanced up at the freighter towering over him. If you think it's safe to move it.
It should be for now, Mara said.
Thrawn told me he'd lifted all the search and detention orders for the rest of the group, but you'd better disappear anyway after I go. You'll have the whole fleet screaming down your necks again if and when I get Carda out. Better run a fine-edge scan on the Etherway before you take it anywhere, though. There has to be a homing beacon aboard for Thrawn to have gotten the jump on me the way he did.
She felt her lip twitch.
And knowing Thrawn, he's probably got someone tailing me, too. I'll have to get rid of him before I leave the planet.
I can give you a hand with that, Avis said grimly. We're disappearing anyway, right?
Right.
Mara paused, trying to think if there was anything else she needed to tell him.
I guess that's it. Let's get going.
Right. Avis hesitated. I still don't know whose side you're on, Mara. If you're on ours, good luck.
She nodded, feeling a hard lump settle into her throat.
Thanks.
Two hours later, she was strapped into the Skipray's cockpit, a strange and unpleasant sense of déjà vu burning through her as she drove toward deep space. It had been in a ship just like this one that she'd screamed off into the sky over the Mirkur forest a few weeks ago in hot pursuit of an escaped prisoner. Now, like a twisted repeat of history, she once again found herself chasing after Luke Skywalker. Only this time, she wasn't trying to kill or capture him. This time, she was going to plead for his help.
Chapter 20.
The last pair of villagers detached themselves from the group standing at the back wall and made their way toward the raised judgment seat. Cabal stood there, watching them come. And then, as Luke had known he would, the Jedi Master stood up.
Jedi Skywalker, he said, gesturing Luke to the seat, the final case of the evening is yours.
Yes, Master Cabal, Luke said, bracing himself as he stepped over and gingerly sat down. It was, to his mind, a thoroughly uncomfortable chair. Too warm, too large, and far too ornate. Even more than the rest of Cabal's home, it had an alien smell to it, and a strangely disturbing aura that Luke could only assume was a lingering after-effect of the hours the Jedi Master had spent in it judging his people. Now it was Luke's turn to do so. Taking a deep breath, trying to push back the fatigue that had become a permanent part of him, he nodded at the two villagers.
I'm ready, he said. Please begin.
It was a relatively simple case, as such things went. The first villager's livestock had gotten through the second's fence and had stripped half a dozen of his fruit bushes before they'd been discovered and driven back. The animal's owner was willing to pay compensation for the ruined bushes, but the second was insisting that he also rebuild the fence. The first countered that a properly built fence wouldn't have failed in the first place, and that, furthermore, his livestock had suffered injuries from the sharp edges as they went through. Luke sat quietly and let them talk, waiting until the arguments and counter-arguments finally ended.
All right, he said. In the matter of the fruit bushes themselves, my judgment is that you, he nodded to the first villager, will pay for the replacement of those damaged beyond repair, plus an additional payment to compensate for the fruit eaten or destroyed by your livestock. The latter amount will be determined by the village council.
Beside him, Cabal stirred, and Luke winced at the disapproval he could sense from the Jedi Master. For a second he floundered, wondering if he should back up and try a different solution. But changing his mind so abruptly didn't sound like a good thing to do.
and anyway, he really didn't have any better ideas. So what was he doing here?
He looked around the room, fighting against a sudden flush of nervousness. They were all looking at him. Kabauth, the two supplicants, the rest of the villagers who'd come tonight for Jedi judgment. All of them expecting him to make the right decision.
As to the fence, I'll examine it tomorrow morning, he continued. I want to see how badly it was damaged before I make my decision.
The two men bowed and backed away.
I therefore declare this session to be closed, Kabauth called.
His voice echoed grandly, despite the relatively small size of the room. An interesting effect, and Luke found himself wondering if it was a trick of the room's acoustics, or yet another Jedi technique that Master Yoda had never taught him. Though why he would ever need such a technique, he couldn't imagine.
The last of the villagers filed out of the room. Kabauth cleared his throat. Reflexively, Luke braced himself.
I sometimes wonder, Jedi Skywalker, the old man said gravely, whether or not you have really been listening to me these past few days.
I'm sorry, Master Kabauth, Luke said, an all-too-familiar lump sticking in his throat. No matter how hard he tried, it seemed, he was never quite able to measure up to Kabauth's expectations.
Sorry? Kabauth's eyebrows rose sardonically. Sorry? Jedi Skywalker, you had it all right there in your hands. You should have cut off their prattle far sooner than you did. Your time is too valuable to waste with petty recriminations. You should have made the decision yourself on the amount of compensation, but instead gave it over to that absurd excuse of a village council. And as to the fence,
he shook his head in mild disgust.
There was absolutely no reason for you to postpone judgment on that. Everything you needed to know about the damage was right there in their minds. It should have been no trouble, even for you, to have pulled that from them.
Luke swallowed. Yes, Master Kabauth, he said. But reading another person's thoughts that way seems wrong.
When you are using that knowledge to help him, Kabauth countered, how can that be wrong?
Luke waved a hand helplessly. I'm trying to understand, Master Kabauth, but this is all so new to me.
Kabauth's bushy eyebrows lifted.
Is it, Jedi Skywalker? Is it really? You mean you've never violated someone's personal preference in order to help him? Or ignored some minor bureaucratic rule that stood between you and what needed to be done?
Luke felt his cheeks flush, thinking back to Lando's use of that illegal slicer code to get his X-Wing repaired at the Struis Van shipyards.
Yes, I've done that on occasion, he admitted. But this is different somehow. It feels, I don't know, like I'm taking more responsibility for these people's lives than I should.
I understand your concerns, Kabauth said, less severely this time. But that is indeed the crux of the matter. It is precisely the acceptance and wielding of responsibility that sets a Jedi apart from all others in the galaxy.
He sighed deeply.
You must never forget, Luke, that in the final analysis, these people are primitives. Only with our guidance can they ever hope to achieve any real maturity.
I wouldn't call them primitive, Master Kabauth, Luke suggested hesitantly. They have modern technology, a reasonably efficient system of government.
The trappings of civilization without the substance, Kabauth said with a contemptuous snort. Machines and societal constructs do not define a culture's maturity, Jedi Skywalker. Maturity is defined solely
by the understanding and use of the Force.
His eyes drifted away, as if peering into the past.
There was such a society once, Luke, he said softly. A vast and shining example of the heights all could aspire to. For 1,000 generations, we stood tall among the lesser beings of the galaxy, guardians of justice and order, the creators of true civilization. The Senate could debate and pass laws, but it was the Jedi who turned those laws into reality.
His mouth twisted.
And in return, the galaxy destroyed us.
Luke frowned. I thought it was just the Emperor and a few dark Jedi who exterminated the Jedi.
Cabal smiled bitterly. Do you truly believe that even the Emperor could have succeeded in such a task without the consent of the entire galaxy?
He shook his head.
No, Luke. They hated us. All the lesser beings did. Hated us for our power and our knowledge and our wisdom. Hated us for our maturity.
His smile vanished. And that hatred still exists, waiting only for the Jedi to reemerge to blaze up again.
Luke shook his head slowly. It didn't really seem to fit with what little he knew about the destruction of the Jedi. But on the other hand, he hadn't lived through that era.
Cabal had.
Hard to believe, he murmured.
Believe it, Jedi Skywalker, Cabal rumbled.
His eyes caught Luke's, burning suddenly with a cold fire.
That's why we must stand together, you and I. Why we must never let down our guard before a universe that would destroy us. Do you understand?
I think so, Luke said, rubbing at the corner of his eye. His mind felt so sluggish in the fatigue dragging at him. And yet, even as he tried to think about Cabal's words, images flowed unbidden from his memory. Images of Master Yoda, gruff but unafraid, with no trace of bitterness or anger toward anyone at the destruction of his fellow Jedi. Images of Ben Kenobi in the Mos Eisley Cantina, treated with a sort of aloof respect, but respect nonetheless, after he'd been forced to cut down those two troublemakers. And clearest of all, images of his encounter at the New Cove Tap Cafe, of the Barabel asking for the mediation of a stranger, and accepting without question even those parts of Luke's judgment that had gone against him. Of the rest of the crowd, watching with hope and expectation and relief that a Jedi was there to keep things from getting out of hand. I haven't experienced any such hatred.
Cabal gazed at him from under bushy eyebrows. You will, he said darkly, as will your sister and her children.
Luke's chest tightened. I can protect them.
Can you teach them as well? Cabal countered. Have you the wisdom and skill to bring them to full knowledge of the ways of the Force?
I think so, yes.
Cabal snorted. If you think but do not know, then you gamble with their lives, he bit out. You risk their futures over a selfish whim.
It's not a whim, Luke insisted. Together, Leia and I can do it.
If you try, you will risk losing them to the dark side, Cabal said flatly.
He sighed, his eyes drifting away from Luke as he looked around the room.
We can't take that chance, Luke, he said quietly. There are so few of us as it is. The endless war for power still rages. The galaxy is in turmoil. We who remain must stand together against those who would destroy everything. He turned his eyes suddenly back on Luke.
No, we can't risk being divided and destroyed again. You must bring your sister and her children to me.
I can't do that, Luke said. Cabal's expression changed. Not now, at least, Luke amended hastily. It wouldn't be safe for Leia to travel right now. The Imperials have been hunting her for months, and Jomark isn't all that far from the edge of their territory.
Do you doubt that I can protect her?
No, I don't doubt you, Luke said, choosing his words carefully. It's just that... He paused. Cabalth had gone abruptly stiff, his eyes gazing outward at nothing. Master Cabalth, he asked, are you all right? There was no reply. Luke stepped to his side, reaching out with the Force and wondering uneasily if the other was ill. But as always, the Jedi Master's mind was closed to him. Come, Master Cabalth, he said, taking the other's arm. I'll help you to your chambers. Cabalth blinked twice, and with what seemed to be an effort, brought his gaze back to Luke's face. He took a shuddering breath, and suddenly he was back to normal again.
You're tired, Luke, he said. Leave me and return to your chambers for sleep.
Luke was tired, he had to admit. Are you all right?
I'm fine, Cabalth assured him, a strangely grim tone to his voice.
Because if you need my help...
I said, leave me, Cabalth snapped. I am a Jedi Master. I need help from no one.
Luke found himself two paces back from Cabalth without any recollection of having taken the steps. I'm sorry, Master Cabalth, he said. I didn't mean any disrespect. The other's face softened a bit.
I know you didn't, he said.
He took another deep breath, exhaled it quietly.
Bring your sister to me, Jedi Skywalker. I will protect her from the Empire, and will teach her such power as you can't imagine.
Far in the back of Luke's mind, a small warning bell went off. Something about those words, or perhaps the way Cabalth had said them.
Now return to your chambers, Cabalth ordered.
Once again, his eyes seemed to be drifting away toward nothing.
Sleep, and we will talk further in the morning.
He stood before her, his face half hidden by the cowl of his robe, his yellow eyes piercingly bright as they gazed across the infinite distance between them. His lips moved, but his words were drowned out by the throaty hooting of alarms all around them, filling Mara with an urgency that was rapidly edging into panic. Between her and the Emperor, two figures appeared. The dark, imposing image of Darth Vader, and the smaller, black-clad figure of Luke Skywalker. They stood before the Emperor, facing each other, and ignited their lightsabers. The blades crossed, brilliant red-white against brilliant green-white, and they prepared for battle. And then, without warning, the blades disengaged, and with twin roars of hatred audible even over the alarms, both turned and strode toward the Emperor. Mara heard herself cry out as she struggled to rush to her master's aid. But the distance was too great, her body too sluggish. She screamed a challenge, trying to at least distract them. But neither Vader nor Skywalker seemed to hear her. They moved outward to flank the Emperor. And as they lifted their lightsabers high, she saw that the Emperor was gazing at her. She looked back at him, wanting desperately to turn away from the coming disaster, but unable to move. A thousand thoughts and emotions flooded in through that gaze,
a glittering kaleidoscope of pain and fear and rage that spun far too fast for her to really absorb. The Emperor raised his hands, sending cascades of jagged blue-white lightning at his enemies. Both men staggered under the counterattack, and Mara watched with a sudden agonized hope that this time it might end differently. But no. Vader and Skywalker straightened, and with another roar of rage, they lifted their lightsabers high. "You will kill Luke Skywalker." And with a jerk that threw her against her restraints, Mara snapped out of the dream. For a minute, she just sat there, gasping for breath and struggling against the fading vision of lightsabers poised to strike. The small cockpit of the skip ray pressed tightly around her, triggering a momentary surge of claustrophobia. The back and neck of her flight suit were wet with perspiration, clammy against her skin. From what seemed to be a great distance, a proximity alert was pinging. The dream again. The same dream that had followed her around the galaxy for 5 years now. The same situation. The same horrifying ending. The same final, desperate plea. But this time, things were going to be different. This time, she had the power to kill Luke Skywalker. She looked out at the muttling of hyperspace spinning around the skip ray's canopy, some last bit of her mind coming fully awake. No, that was wrong. She wasn't going to kill Skywalker at all. She was going to ask him for help. The sour taste of bile rose into her throat. With an effort, she forced it down. No argument, she told herself sternly. If she wanted to rescue Carda, she was going to have to go through with it. Skywalker owed Carda this much. Later, after he'd repaid the debt, there would be time enough to kill him. The proximity alert changed tone, indicating 30 seconds to go. Cupping the hyperdrive levers in her hand, Mara watched the indicator go to zero and gently pushed the levers back. Mottling became star lines, became the black of space. Space, and the dark sphere of a planet directly ahead. She had arrived at Jomark. Mentally crossing her fingers, she tapped the comm, keying the code she'd programmed in during the trip. Luck was with her. Here, at least, Thrawn's people were still using standard Imperial guidance transponders. The skip ray's displays flashed the location, an island forming the center of a ring-shaped lake just past the sunset line. She triggered the transponder once more to be sure, then keyed in the sublight drive and started down, trying to ignore that last image of the Emperor's face. The wailing of the ship's alarm jerked her awake. "What?" she barked aloud to the empty cockpit, sleep-sticky eyes flicking across the displays for the source of the trouble. It wasn't hard to find. The skip ray had rolled half over onto its side, its control surfaces screaming with stress as the computer fought to keep her from spinning out of the sky. Inexplicably, she was already deep inside the lower atmosphere, well past the point where she should have switched over to repulsor lifts. Clenching her teeth, she made the switchover, and then gave the scan map a quick look. She'd only been out of it for a minute or two, but at the speed the skip ray was doing, even a few seconds of inattention could be fatal. She dug her knuckles hard into her eyes, fighting against the fatigue pulling at her and feeling sweat breaking out again on her forehead. Flying while half asleep, her old instructor had often warned her, was the quickest, if messiest, way to end your life. And if she had gone down, there would have been no one to blame but herself. Or would there? She leveled the ship off, confirmed that there were no mountains in her path, and keyed in the autopilot. The Isolimir and the portable nutrient framework that Avis had given her were back near the aft hatchway, secured to the engine access panel. Unstrapping from her seat, Mara made her way back toward it. It was as if someone had snapped on a light switch. One second, she felt as if she had just finished a four-day battle. Half a step later, a meter or so from the Isolimir, the fatigue abruptly vanished. She smiled grimly to herself. So her suspicion had been correct. Thrawn's mad Jedi Master didn't want any company. "Nice try," she called into the air. Unfastening the Isolimir frame from the access panel, she lugged it back to the cockpit and wedged it beside her seat. The rim of mountains surrounding the lake was visible now on the electropulse scanner, and the infrared had picked up an inhabited structure on the far side. Probably where Skywalker and this mad Jedi Master were, she decided. A guess that was confirmed a moment later, as the sensors picked up a small mass of spaceship-grade metal just outside the building. There were no weapons emplacements or defense shields anywhere that she could detect, either on the rim or on the island beneath her. Maybe Cabal didn't think he needed anything so primitive as turbo lasers to protect him. Maybe he was right. Hunching herself over the control board, hair trigger alert for any danger, Mara headed in. She was nearly to the midpoint of the crater when the attack came. A sudden impact on the skip ray's underside that kicked the entire craft a few centimeters upward. The second impact came on the heels of the first. This one centered on the ventral fin and yawing the ship hard to starboard. The ship jolted a third time before Mara finally identified the weapon. Not missiles or laser blasts, but small, fast-moving rocks, undetectable by most of the skip ray's sophisticated sensors. The fourth impact knocked out the repulsor lifts, sending the skip ray falling out of the sky. Chapter 21. Mara swore under her breath, throwing the skip ray's control surfaces into glide mode and keying for a contour scan of the cliff face beneath the rim building. A landing up on the rim was out of the question now. Putting down on the limited area up there without her repulsor lifts might be possible, but not with a Jedi Master fighting her the whole way. Alternately, she could go for the dark island beneath her, which would give her more room to operate, but leave her with the problem of getting back up to the rim. Ditto if she tried to find a big enough landing area somewhere else down the mountains. Or she could admit defeat, fire up the main drive and pull for space, and go after Carda alone. Gritting her teeth, she studied the contour scan. The rock storm had stopped after the fourth hit. The Jedi Master, no doubt, waiting to see if she'd crash without further encouragement on his part. With a little luck, maybe she could convince him that she was done for, without actually wrecking the ship in the process. If she could just find the proper formation in that cliff face. This book is continued on cassette number 9, side 1.